Gulf Coast State College, Anatomy and Physiology, the Spinal Cord Part 3, along with Embryology of the Nervous System, a Study of the Cerebrospinal Fluid, and a Brief Introduction to the Brain. This is a great place to introduce the brain because there are some similarities to what we've already done in the spinal cord and what we'll study in great detail in the next unit on the brain. This is just the laundry list slide. Don't get nervous and freak out. We'll cover each one of these things in order, starting with embryology of the nervous system, followed by the cranial meninges, which are real similar to the spinal meninges, and then we'll look at the cerebrospinal fluid in some detail. This is the long story of development of the nervous system, but it's really hard to understand the detailed story of embryology of the nervous system if you haven't studied the brain yet. And we haven't studied the brain yet, so it's going to be hard to make sense of this and to understand it. So I'm going to cut to the chase and cut you some slack. For now, let's skip the long story and go to the short story. Here's what I want you to know at this point in time of our course for embryology of the nervous system. I'll use this visual off to your right of a 20-day embryo. So here we go. The nervous system starts out very early as a flat plate of cells called the neural plate. Then it starts to fold up like a taco, develops a groove down the middle that some genius called the neural groove, and the folds are called the neural folds. At about week 6 or so, those folds come together and form a tubular structure you need to know is called the neural tube. Why do I focus on this? Because things don't always go as planned. Sometimes the development does not happen properly, and babies are born with something called neural tube defects, which are typically abbreviated NTDs. There's one you may have already heard of called spina bifida. We also know that there's a very important vitamin that pregnant women are supplemented with to try to decrease the chance of neural tube defects like spina bifida. And you need to write this down. That vitamin is folic acid, also called folate. And women who are deficient in folic acid have a much higher chance of neural tube defects such as spina bifida. The next slide really shows nothing new. It's from your book. It's a figure that shows the neural plate, then the folding up like a taco with the groove and the folds, and finally the tubular structure called the neural tube. This photograph shows a baby born with spina bifida, a neural tube defect. And underneath this thin membranous-like looking structure might be the spinal cord. So don't go mashing on that, because if the baby doesn't already have nervous tissue damage, you may cause damage by mashing on that. So please treat this with care. There are other forms of neural tube defects. Some are milder than this and some are much more severe. There's even a really bad form of a neural tube defect where the neural tube doesn't close over the brain and the baby has an open skull essentially and no brain. And obviously those embryos are not viable. Now we'll talk about the cranial meninges, very similar to the spinal meninges. What your book does is take a frontal section out of the skull, sucks it out, and blows it up to your right real big. So let's break this down. Here in lime green is the dura mater, the tough outer superficial layer. But it's different from the spinal meninges in one major respect. Periodically in the dura mater of the brain are these partial thickness splits in the connective tissue dura. And within there are these venous puddles. They're essentially veins that run within the dura, and they have a name. They're called dural venous sinuses, with a star. They are very important. We'll see why in a few minutes. Then comes the middle layer, our old friend shown here in sort of a spidery lavender color. That is the middle arachnoid mater. And finally, in dark red, plastered on the brain like shrink wrap or cellophane, is the pia mater, which you remember contains a lot of blood vessels. Let's talk about the cerebrospinal fluid now in detail. First, where is it located? It's located in three general places. The first general area where we find brain water is in the ventricles within the brain. Let's take a look at the figure to your left. This is what we call the transparent brain. You're kind of looking into the right side of the brain with X-ray goggles, and you see these blue things that kind of look like water balloons. These are the four ventricles or chambers within the brain that have the brain water. Two of them, and I'll kind of trace them, they're kind of shaped like ram's horns. You got one of these in each of the sides of the brain, and they're called the two lateral ventricles. Nobody calls them number one and number two. They're just called the lateral ventricles. Then we have the slit-like midline ventricle called the third ventricle. To me, this always reminds me of an alien head and reminds me of that movie Aliens. That movie freaked me out. Well, that's a whole other story. But anyway, then we have the fourth ventricle, which is shaped like a pyramid at the base of the cerebellum. The second major area we find brain water is in our old friend, the central canal. Here I'm tracing it. And remember, that is actually connected to the fourth ventricle. Finally, the brain water is located in my favorite space, the subarachnoid space, which bathes the brain and bathes the spinal cord. Well, what's the purpose of this liquid? Number one, protection. Mechanical protection for sure. It's like a cushion of water that surrounds and protects our brain and our spinal cord. It's like those water-filled barriers you see on the highway that prevent you from running into the concrete. So our brain is actually floating like a floating candle within our bony skull, protected by the CSF. It also provides chemical protection because in the brain water, we got just the right balance of water and ions that our brain cells like to be bathed in. Another function is circulation. And if I were you, I would pencil off to the side, kind of like blood. You remember blood? In with the good, out with the bad. We'll study very soon that there's a normal circulation pattern to the brain water. And it does do kind of the same deal, in with the good and out with the bad. Now let's learn how we create brain water. So this slide is titled CSF formation, and we have a beautiful transverse section through the skull at autopsy. You can see beautifully the two lateral ventricles, and inside each ventricle, including the laterals, are these sort of membranous, lacy wad of capillaries called the choroid plexus. The choroid plexus, they are just capillaries inside each ventricles. And what your book does is take those capillaries, sucks them out, blows them up really big in a drawing to your right. And here is one of the capillaries from the choroid plexus. And remember, they're lined by our old friends, our old neuroglial cell called the ependymal cells. And the ependymal cells, what they do is they suck the watery plasma out of the capillaries, they perform their metabolic magic and convert it into brain water, and they drip drop the cerebrospinal fluid into each of our brain ventricles. I hope you get to see the choroid plexus in the brain dissection in lab. You can take your probe and kind of fish them out of the lateral ventricles and get a good look at them. Now we have to learn how the brain water circulates. And I love this picture. This is a transparent brain, but now we're looking in to the front of the brain and on. Just for an overview, here are the two lateral ventricles shaped like ram's horns. There's the midline third ventricle, and here's the pyramid-shaped fourth ventricle at the base of the cerebellum. The short version of the story is brain water goes from the laterals to the third to the fourth ventricle. And that's easy because it goes in order. But we have to know more than that. So let's look at this in more detail. How does the brain water get from the laterals to the third? Through these structures called the interventricular foramen. And I love that name. Inter means between. Ventricle means ventricle, and foramen means hole. So to get from the laterals to the third, we go through the in-between the ventricle holes. And then from the third ventricle to the fourth ventricle, we go through this little tunnel or this little channel you will call the cerebral aqueduct. Let's break that down too. Cerebral means brain, aqua means water, and duct, well, it just means duct. So from the third to the fourth, we go through the brain water duct. And then look at the fourth ventricle shaped like a pyramid. It has three tiny holes in it called apertures. All an aperture is a hole. So I picture the fourth ventricle like a pyramid-shaped water balloon. And I take a pin and I make three pin pricks in it. One right on the top in the middle. Call that the median aperture. Then I pinprick it once on each side, and those would be the lateral apertures. And the key question on this slide is, where does the brain water go after it exits the apertures? And the answer is, it percolates out of those pinpricks and into my favorite space called the subarachnoid space, where we can bathe the brain and bathe the spinal cord in that wonderful fluid. Then we got to get the brain water back where it came from. This slide is titled CSF absorption. And the story is kind of the same story as lymph. Remember lymph? Lymph came out of a blood vessel, and at the end of the day, we had to get it back into a blood vessel. That's a general principle in anatomy. If you suck water out of the blood, you better put it back into the blood eventually, or you might not make it too many more days. So here's the setup. We have the cross-section of the skull. In lime green, we have our dura mater with our dural venous sinus, shown as this blue puddle of blood. Then we have our purple spidery arachnoid mater. And then we have the pia mater in red plastered on the brain. Now, on the last slide, we just jacked the fluid into the subarachnoid space. But we've got to get it back in the cardiovascular system. How? Through this wonderful structure called an arachnoid villus. Villus just means like a finger-like or warty-like projection. And take a look at this puppy. Here it is here. I'll circle one of them. There are many of them, of course. To me, it looks like a broccoli, so I'll use that as an analogy while we're looking at this drawing. Here's the stem of the broccoli in purple. That's connected to the arachnoid mater. And then the stem of the broccoli punches through the green dura mater. And then the head of the broccoli is right inside the dural venous sinus. So how does this work? Well, the stem of the broccoli works like a pump, and it pumps the fluid out of the subarachnoid space through the dura mater, punches through, and then percolates out the brain water through the head of the broccoli into the dural venous sinus. And we finally accomplished our mission. We got the brain water back where it came from. We got it into our cardiovascular system, into the dural venous sinus. Now, don't call the arachnoid villus a broccoli pump on the test. I might laugh a little bit, but you really have to call them arachnoid villus. This next slide is beautiful. There's nothing new on this slide at all. It's just a wonderful summary of all that we did so far, with stars all over the place, and I put a big black rectangle around it. It's called the summary of the formation, circulation, and absorption of cerebrospinal fluid. So let's go through this again. Off to your left in green, all this says is our brain water is made by the choroid plexus in all of our ventricles. Then, let's move over to the right-hand side, to this flow chart in yellow. I want you to always start with the lateral ventricles when you trace the circulation. So, brain water is made in the lateral ventricles. It goes to the third ventricle through the interventricular foramen. Remember, the in between the ventricle hole. From the third ventricle, it gets to the fourth ventricle through the brain water duct that you will really call the cerebral aqueduct. From the fourth ventricle, it percolates out those little pinpricks called the median and lateral apertures and gets into the wonderful space called the subarachnoid space. From there, the arachnoid villi pump the fluid from the arachnoid space and into the dural venous sinuses with triple stars. And we've accomplished our mission. We got the water back into the cardiovascular system, and round and round and round she goes. Okay, so you can look at this, and anybody can sit down and memorize that, but how do I ask the question on the test? Because you have to be able to understand and analyze this stuff. So here goes some real-life examples you might see. Let's say on the test I give you a patient with meningitis, which I will tell you will clog shut the subarachnoid space with pus. Then, which ventricles will become dilated and swollen with fluid? A condition in slang that's called water on the brain, but we will really call that hydrocephalus. And you will tell me the ventricles that will become swollen will be all of them, the laterals, the third, and the fourth. How do I figure that out on the test? Well, using this diagram, you just take a look at this, and wherever I make the blockage on the test, you just be a beaver and build a dam, and everything upstream will back up and swell up with fluid. So I'll give you another example I could put on the test. Let's say I put a metastatic tumor and I block the cerebral aqueduct. Therefore, which ventricles will become dilated and swollen with fluid in real life and on the test? You will tell me, okay, I'll be a beaver, I'll build a dam, so everything will back up upstream. Therefore, the laterals and the third ventricle will become swollen with fluid. Finally, another example. Let's say I have a patient that gets shot with two BBs, and the BBs block both of the interventricular foramen. Which ventricles will become dilated and swollen with fluid? And you will say, of course, the lateral ventricles. What's the significance of this, by the way? What does hydrocephalus do? Well, if you dilate those ventricles with water, the brain, of course, is stuck inside a bony case. So in hydrocephalus, essentially, the brain is getting crushed inside the bony skull from within. So how do they treat that? And this is beyond the scope of this course, but it's a great place to throw it in. At least when I went to school, they did something called a shunt. Essentially, what they did was take a plastic tube that looks like a catheter, and they would put it into the swollen ventricles. They would run the tube underneath the skin and into the belly cavity, into the peritoneal cavity. So the brain water would drain from the swollen ventricles into the belly cavity. And that's how they did it. I think they still do it that way. There are some advanced procedures now, one called a third ventriculostomy, a lot more technically difficult and more advanced than when I went to school. So you can Google that if you want to. But that's how we treated hydrocephalus in the old days. So yeah, this stuff is for real. It's not just to learn to get an A for a test. It's to understand so you can take care of patients better in the future.